This is 69, the podcast. I'm Dave Haynes. 69 has been covering the digital signage industry since the dawn of man, first online and now as a podcast. This podcast gives me the time to really talk to people about technology and issues, get past the PR and jargon, and into what stuff actually means. I try to help listeners understand why they should care. The podcasts are free, and I try to get a new one out weekly, but I travel a lot, so sometimes I'll miss a week. The 69 podcast has been gratefully sponsored and supported since the start by Jeremy Gavin and the fine folks at ScreenFeed, the digital signage content store. ScreenFeed makes beautiful-looking, totally automated content for signage and digital out-of-home networks. Check them out at ScreenFeed.com. Getting agencies and media planners out of the process was always going to be critical to enabling small to medium businesses to do marketing campaigns on digital billboards across the country. The idea of online media marketplaces is not new, and there are certainly lots of ad exchanges and programmatic digital out-of-home companies already out there. But a relatively new company called Blip is going at things differently and seemingly getting some traction. The Salt Lake City startup has a platform that enables small, hyper-local businesses to do media buys on billboards near them, and only buy as much time and exposure as their budget allows. It means a local mortgage broker who only has $1,000 for advertising can still buy time on a big board or boards. And for the media owner, it opens up new revenue from ad clients that they wouldn't normally chase, because the time needed to open and service these small accounts just isn't worth it. This works now because Blip is largely filling up unbooked, or what is sometimes called remnant, inventory. Daniel Fleischer has been involved in the digital out-of-home sector for more than a decade, but he amicably left Ayuda in the wake of its acquisition recently by BroadSign. Now he runs Blip for Canada. So Daniel, thanks for spending some time with me. I don't know next to anything about Blip. So could you explain the company, its background, and what it does?
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, Dave. Sure. Well, Blip... We're essentially the first self-serve, what we call pay-per-blip, digital billboard marketplace. What that means is we market to SMB advertisers, hyper-local, sort of really small, potentially even consumer, prosumer kind of potential advertisers, and give them an online experience to make it really easy to buy billboards. All of these potential advertisers, they use Google and Facebook. They're often familiar with digital marketing, which is very flexible. But that flexibility has been a bit lacking, as you know, in out of home. So what Blip does is it makes it possible for them to buy billboards with any budget, without committing to long-term, sort of long-term budget or timeline. And we just make it very easy for them to buy that space. And therefore, because we do that at scale, we bring dozens of thousands of advertisers to out of home.
So if I'm understanding this correctly, the difference here is that if you normally wanted to buy a billboard along a major thoroughfare leading into a big city or whatever it may be, you've got to buy a campaign, and that campaign may cost many thousands of dollars, and it's out of reach for the average small to medium business. This way, you're saying you can buy, no matter the budget, you could buy just like a one-time ad that's going to run one time conceivably, or have a budget that's very finite. So it's this spot is going to run four times in this particular location, or whatever the case may be. Is that an accurate way of describing it?
That's exactly right. And you know, individually, a buy like that may not seem at first glance attractive to a media owner. Mm-hmm. But where it becomes attractive is when you bring that at scale. Last month, for example, I think we activated 850 new advertisers. And yes, some of them maybe their budget is $100 or $200. The ad server will determine when and where to play them. And after a few flips, or blips, as we call them, it's done. But if you can do that over and over and over again, you know, with at the scale, we're talking thousands of these, then you're consistently selling out that spot, and you're filling up that space. So the scale is the trick of it. That's how we bring value to the media owner.
Now, in my old newspaper days, we used to call unsold ad space remnant inventory, stuff that wasn't booked and was available, and they would sell it for less cost. For the media owner, is this something they would regard as remnant space that ensures that their full loop is bought?
So that is a fascinating question. And if you'll permit me a minute to give you a bit of context in how I answer that,
sure,
that could be helpful. So you're right. And that is actually how programmatic advertising in our space and out of home began, right? When if you go back a couple of years and you say, what is programmatic? What did that mean? Well, it's just let's sell off the remnant space just to, you know, that was it when it came to yield optimization back then. We're filling unsold spots and, you know, we're driving up our revenue that way. Over time that has evolved to be a little bit more sophisticated, and you sort of expect to be able to bring in guaranteed buys and so on, and programmatic sort of methodology became more about the pipes, the automation, how you bring in those buys, which at the end of the day were similar buys. These are still big brands. You're still talking about a length of commitment and a budgetary commitment and so on. So here, what we've done is basically we're bringing in that demand, which at first starts out as a remnant sort of sale, but very quickly, what ends up happening is because we're selling that out, and we're then slowly driving up the demand for that space. Because if an SMB, a small business, they have some budget that they're already used to spending digitally, they're still going to spend it, and they see the effectiveness of the campaign. And if we go back and we say, well, look, it's sold out. You didn't quite make it onto this, these set of boards. If you increase your spend by a couple of cents, just increase, this here and there, we actually are able to start driving up the demand at scale. If we do that across all 10, 20, 30, 100 advertisers that can be vying for that spot, we are getting them to sort of bid, but still in a very fair way where the budget is equivalent to what they're used to spending, and, they perceive value for that. And this, it ends up being not a remnant sale anymore. That spot or multiple spots that are being sold by Blip for the media owner end up being just as profitable, if not more profitable. Sometimes we'll be selling that space for more than the direct sales team, and certainly quite a bit more than other, I guess you could say, automated or programmatic channels. So it very quickly evolves into something that is much more than selling remnant space. They dedicate that time or that space to us, and we just keep selling more and more and more of it. So we end up being more of an outsourced sales partner than a programmatic remnant space filler. That was a very long answer. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would imagine a owner of a small business in whatever city it is never going to find their way to a programmatic ad exchange, or it's highly unlikely they will, because they don't even know what it is. They wouldn't know where to begin to look. So you're really tapping into different budgets, or making different kinds of marketing budgets available to these media owners than what they're going to get out of programmatic, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you said it, what they're going to get out of programmatic to them, what does that mean? The word programmatic doesn't mean anything. Their experience with advertising already is programmatic. It's online, it's digital. Programmatic means something here and out of home because it has been so lacking. I'm not going to get into the defining what programmatic is. We can talk about that in the next question if you wish. But here, what we're doing is we are essentially going after the same objective that a lot of other programmatic companies in our space are doing, which is to tap into those other budgets, tap into new digital dollars, tap into these other bigger pies, and siphon some of that into out of home. We're doing the same thing, just with a completely different, unprecedented audience segment. That is, if you take a look at the data and the studies, which we have done, is probably just as big, if not bigger, globally, than this other digital pie that everybody has been sort of gold rush clamoring to get into. Mm-hmm. you know, there's in the United States, there's probably there's several million businesses, small businesses, and the vast majority of them, 98% of them probably have not bought out of home. And that's exactly what we're changing. So if you look at that at scale, it's just hard to imagine a world in which we are not tapping into that, making it more easy for those kind of businesses to buy out of home. And I think, you know, we've seen it already. It that has the potential to bring just a tremendous amount of new value and spend out of home.
The challenge with that, though, is kind of twofold. A, these people have to find you, but more to the point, when you run a big media company, you may have a handful of advertisers. Here you're talking about the scale of hundreds or thousands of advertisers, and they're inexperienced advertisers in a lot of cases, and therefore needy. So the $1 million budget that you get from a major brand and the $500 budget you get from an auto dealer in a particular city require just as much work. So how do you manage that?
That is the golden question. That is exactly why. Actually, your question is very insightful, because it's precisely why out of home today hasn't been sold this way. If you talk to any account executive at any out of home advertising company, no matter how regional or independent or small or local they are, there is still a minimum threshold below which they cannot sell, because it's not profitable. There's no way that an account executive or team can has the time to curate 1,000 different advertisers. They'll never meet their numbers. That's the point that you're getting at. And what's interesting is that the reason that exists is because the bar for entering out of home has been raised so high over the years. If you go back, more than 100 years, all of the first forms of out of home advertising, they all started precisely local. If you're walking down the main street, that's how you saw the opportunity. You saw an ad in a newspaper. You saw it walking down a street and said, I'm going to advertise my storefront business here. So it was all local. National, you know, came about because as that space got bigger and bigger and more real estate opportunities popped up, and, you know, you got the interest from bigger brands, national brands that saw this as an opportunity that created that funneled in much more spend. And so that minimum entry point just became inaccessible to the small business. But what I think we need to remember is that out of home is its roots are coming from the SMB, and we sort of lost that. So getting back to your question, yes, how do we bring that back to out of home? It's an extremely, it is challenging. It's to be able to be profitable at scale, you have to bring a lot of intelligence when it comes to automating that demand, driving that demand. And for that reason, we're not a typical sales company. We're not just an extension of the sales force and doing the same thing that they're doing. We are using digital technologies, automation technologies. We are driving demand with a lot of different, you know, there's a lot of different digital tools, and it's a lot of digital marketing prowess. There's a lot of secret sauce stuff too, but we don't do a single outbound sort of sales call. That's not what we do. We bring in, we market to pretty much any kind of business. You name it, we've figured out a way to hyper target them. And we have just this massive, massive engine of inbound leads that get automatically curated. And, you know, the ones that are good, we have a fairly large team that engages with them. So there's a lot of human beings at Blip that are speaking to these potential advertisers and their small businesses. And we've sort of nailed down a very efficient way, the science of giving them really good advice, business advice. We are consulting for their business, helping them get awareness for their business by including out of home in there. So I don't know if I'm answering your question, but it's a combination of the human element as well as using a lot of automation technologies to make sure that we're doing that profitably at scale. And it's because this is all that we do and we can do it at scale that we're able to do that profitably. Each individual media owner plant can't do that on their own because they just don't have that scale, but we do. Did I answer the question or did I just run around that in circles?
No, that's fine. The other part I was curious about is you talked about a massive amount of inbound. How did they find you? Are you using like Google AdSense and things like that?
Yeah, everything. There's all of that. There's the paid search stuff. There's all the, there's social feeds, we are everywhere. I remember when in my first few days, I'm 2 months into Blip, so you'll forgive me if I'm not across all of the intricate nitty gritty details of how we do all that demand gen. I'm still learning quite a bit. I've been familiar with the company for a few years now, but we can talk about that later. But I remember when I was attending some industry events, the first week of joining, just speaking to some old industry colleagues and peers. I said, I'm at Blip now, and said, oh, Blip. Yeah. I saw Blip. I saw something in, I was reading Reddit and in my feed, something came up and I was just absolutely amazed. That shows you the power of what we've built, because just the fact that I forget who at this point, but just because they were in the industry, they were targeted, right? And that's not typically what we're doing. I had Cam on board and we talked about this a little bit. So they sort of, tuned the engine a little bit. But anybody that you want to target, we can target. We just have to sort of turn the engine onto them. So we're reaching them through pretty much all of the tools that the consumer uses.
Right.
That's how we're reaching them.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Gavin, CEO of ScreenFeed. Now, I'm not put off by the fact that you're not listening to this podcast to hear me. Just like audiences to any digital signage, you give your attention to content you find interesting or helpful. That's where my company ScreenFeed comes in. Our sole mission is to make your digital signage network more valuable by making content that is more valuable to your audience. If you'd like to drive more attention to your screens, visit ScreenFeed.com to explore the 75-plus content options we've created to do just that. And then give us a call. Now, back to the podcast.
So the high-touch stuff that you're doing when you get these inbound leads and you're doing the front-end consulting and trying to understand their business needs, that, I assume, you try to convert pretty quickly to self-service so that when they come back or they want to make adjustments, they're doing that online, because you can't just keep adding more bodies as you try to grow the company, right?
Yes, absolutely. And in fact, you'd be surprised. We don't have to add significantly more bodies to deal with that scale, because the engine works very well. But you're right. We engage with them as much as is needed, as much as is beneficial to convert them to a paying advertiser. But at the end of the day, Blip is an online marketplace for them to self-serve. Absolutely. So yes, the vast majority, they convert to sort of a self-serve model, but we're of course always there to continue to help them, guide them, advise them, without getting into too much nitty gritty. There's a lot of stuff that we do there with content services, design services, moderation, to make sure that the experience is a very valuable one for the media owner as well, that wants to, preserve their brand value and their polish. So we make sure we're in the middle of that. And in doing that, we're always there monitoring, making sure that, these advertisers are continuing to uphold the standards that the media owners want to see. So, we're not disappearing and letting them just, run wild online. But yeah, there's a great deal of automation that then exists. And we do a bit of curation just to make sure that everything's good.
Yeah. I found it interesting. We're talking about content services and, it's one thing to democratize out of home outdoor advertising, but it doesn't really work long-term if you have a whole bunch of SMB clients who are putting up god-awful looking creative, and to hold their hand through it and guide them as to what works in terms of outdoor is really important, because even stuff that comes out of agencies, I look at it and think,
don't you know better? That's like way too much information on a bill.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Let's not go there. We've all seen some of those examples. Yeah. So sorry, go ahead. What's your question?
So you have those kinds of content services. So if I'm a nail salon in St. Louis, Missouri, I can work with you and you will give, in theory, either paid or free guidance in terms of developing a billboard ad that's going to actually be effective.
That's right. And we're continually working on more tools to do that, even in an automated sense. And you'd be surprised how much that can work. Again, everything that we do has to work at scale. Mm-hmm. So we do experiment with a lot of ideas, concepts. We're always getting input from the sign owners. We're always learning because, you know, we're right now our footprint, we have probably more than, I think, 220 sign owners in the US alone that are partnered with Blip. And we have to get to know each and every single one of their businesses and what their standards are and what is appropriate content for them and so on. So yeah, there's a lot of initial manual sort of work and understanding. And because of that, we're always thinking about how do we propagate that through towards a good scaled system of best practices for the advertisers at large, these potential advertisers at large, and even proactively give them that guidance, give them examples and so on, so that you're right, some of this is free, some can be additional paid services, but at the end of the day, to make sure that very quickly and efficiently we have really good looking content that's going to pass muster for the sign owner. Mm-hmm. and ultimately result in, you know, what's the point of all of this? That it drives value for the advertiser and they become a repeat buyer because the ad was good, it looked great, it was effective, there was good recall, and it drove more business, it drove more walk-ins and or whatever the objective is of their campaign. It drove a business outcome. And always looking at that business outcome that we're trying to drive is key. That's the guiding principle to how we get into, you know, the content curation.
I'm thinking a media owner is inundated by startup companies coming at them saying, hey, we have this new demand side system, we have this supply side system, or whatever it may be. We have something that you can use to optimize your media sales. How were you able to win these media companies over when, you know, you're like the 12th person through the door that month?
Well, I think one has to put one's money where one's mouth is. And you know, you have to be upfront and transparent. You need to set expectations and say, hey, look, this is our model. And this is our culture, by the way. It's a very transparent, honest culture. We said, look, this is what you can expect. Here's how we drive demand. Here's what you can expect in the first few months versus here's what you can expect half a year into the relationship. Here's where we expect the inflection point to be, where we're going to start generating significant revenues. Here's how we're going to do it. Here's how we're going to review it with you every, you know, be in touch with you every day or week. And here's how we're going to work with your sales team. We're just, you know, we're really honest about the model. And that provides a lot of comfort that we're not just coming in promising the sky, promising, you know, auto magic or program magic dollars that just fall from the sky. They do end up falling from the sky, so to speak. But there's a lot of transparency. Well, you know, they get the reports. They see, you know, they see the moderation, they see the content, they see what's happening, they see the volume that we're driving. And very quickly they, you know, if there was hesitation, you know, because there really isn't a commitment here, they can try it. If they don't like it or we're not driving results, well, then they're free to drop us, really. But because we drive the results and they see the power of what we're doing, that almost becomes a non-issue after the initial engagement, because we drive results.
Yeah. So let's talk about trialing it. If I'm a media owner and I've got a set of digital billboards around a particular city and I come across you or you come across me and pitch me, if I want to technically do it, what do I have to do to turn this on?
I mean, you engage with us as you would with any, I'm hesitant here to even, you know, compare this to other programmatic companies. You know, there's a whole contract process and all that stuff, but that's not really the point. The point is that we engage, we discuss, we explain the model, and then we say, all right, what, you know, we're very open to all of the different software sort of ecosystem that exists in our space. So whatever CMS player they're using, you know, we just understand what is their ecosystem, and then we recommend the best approach to getting the content on there. So we work with everybody. We're very open, and we say, look, here's the best way that we can ensure that the content makes its way to the screen. And the rest is, hey, we'll run you through the model. We'll show you how this works. And then we engage and say, all right, so let's talk about how long, you know, what our expectation is before this can start to become, material for you, you know, which means that they're, you know, they're giving us a shot for, you know, a good,
right.
It's not something where there's like a free trial. The whole thing is free, right? It doesn't cost them anything to engage with us. Right. They're not licensing a tech platform. They just, you know, say, all right, this is great. I'll give this a shot for a year. And in that's because they're not oversold. That's really the trick of it. There's no skin off of their back. We, you know, as long as we're not eating away against any existing revenues, we are starting by filling the space that is just not being right. filled. It's going unsold, or they're maybe just filling it up with PSAs or what have you. So, you know, because there's no risk to them, we're engaging for several months. And in that time we're driving content more and more. We're driving good campaigns with increasing revenues over time because of how our model works. And they see the results, and the rest is history.
So if there's a particular piece of software driving a set of billboards, what has to technically happen? Are you putting a script into a placeholder or container, and if there's a valid ad, it lights up? Or do you have to manually schedule?
No, so you don't have to manually schedule anything. You're right. There's a bunch of different methodologies. So if you're using an industry standard platform, you schedule an HTML, like you said, a container. And then, you know, after all the setup's done, we just, you know, we can then target any board if we have content for them. There are some companies out there where we have direct integrations with, so the experience is a little bit more streamlined and can be controlled directly from their CMS. There are cases even, you know, we have our own CMS in player just because, you know, we want to make sure that if they don't have an industry standard platform, and we just need to make sure that they can get that content. That's what we care about at the end of the day.
Right. So if you have a local operator who's using your services and maybe using one or two other companies out there as well, plus their own direct sales on stuff, and the blip stuff is, I don't want to say unpredictable, but you know, you may have a number of things that get bought, and it might be only bought for 10 plays or whatever it may be. How do you manage that and not end up under delivering for the other paid advertisers because this is running more or whatever? At face value, it seems complicated.
So let me make sure I understand your question. What you're saying is, well, let me clarify on our side. We are not doing any kind of decisioning to determine how often other ads that are scheduled by the system play.
Right.
Those are guaranteed. So, let me just actually, maybe let's rephrase the question. I'm not sure I understand the,
So if I'm a media operator and I have a defined number of ads that I can run, let's say I run a rotation of 12 ads on a billboard at any given time, and 9 of them are directly sold. And then I have containers that are in place for blip, and maybe they're working with another company. Does that media company ensure that they deliver all of the sold ads for those 9 direct sales things, and that the blip stuff or the other partner takes it beyond the amount that in some way affects the guarantees that are in place?
Okay, I think I understand. And stop me and correct me if the answer I'm going to give you is not answering your question. But those, you know, nothing is, we're not touching what has been sold directly over there. Now, if there's other sources of revenue coming in, outsource sales or other programmatic channels that are coming in, you know, that is where, yes, they do have to manage it using whatever software they're using, or maybe it's manual, to say, look, here's how much space or share of voice I'm giving to, you know, outsourced demand generator number 1 and outsourced demand generator number 2 and number 3, which is blip. And then they do have to decide if they really have that problem that there are more demand sources than space is available, which, by the way, I have never seen that truly be the case yet.
It's a good problem to have, but it doesn't happen.
It is a good exactly. And, you know, then they can decide over, you know, as all of these companies engage with them, well, who's writing the biggest checks? Who's giving me the best CPMs, the most consistent revenue? And we hold ourselves to task. We hold ourselves accountable. And if we're not delivering, well, you know, our stance is, well, you should give more space to someone else because that's how confident we are in our delivery. The trick of it is also setting expectation. If you set the expectation to say, look, week number one will look like this. The first month, the first 3 months, first 6 months will look like this. We're actually helping them be smarter about that decisioning. We can say, look, this is the amount of space that we need to be able to drive demand. Have a look at that. Take a look at all of your revenue forecast, and let's discuss the best way to implement this. You know, and then they'll see that our results will match what we say, which allows them to make a better, smarter decision about that share of voice. If they even need to make a decision to, you know, decide between all these other programmatic or revenue generating outsourced demand generator companies that they're working with, if they happen to be working with all of them. So, but you know, honestly, it's almost an academic question instead of a practical one. I just have not encountered anywhere in any market a problem of being completely oversold at really good CPMs. You know, honestly, if they have that problem, I would say, look, I mean, that's great. Looks like you've solved the challenge that we're trying to solve at scale for the industry. Maybe you don't need Blip. Give us a call if you do.
Yeah, really. So the company started and is largely located in Salt Lake City, which isn't exactly a media hub. Why there, and are there any challenges around that?
Okay, yeah, this is happy to sort of share a bit about the history of how it got started. A little bit about the founders too. So if you go back a few years, about three, maybe bordering on 4 years ago, this started when one of the two co-founders, Brent Thompson, he was running another company at the time, which was actually was a very successful, it was sold to Logmein, I believe. So Brent is a really smart computer scientist, engineer kind of guy, and he was just looking to get some out-of-home advertising for a specific campaign. And not being an out-of-home guy, not being familiar with the out-of-home industry per se, you know, in the region where he wanted to advertise, he looked at Yesco, Yesco Outdoor Media. Mm-hmm. And so he contacted them, and, you know, it was the same sort of thing that everybody who's not familiar with out-of-home experiences, well, how do I break into this? How do I do this? You know, coming from a digital world, a digital ecosystem, Brent was surprised at how overly complex and complicated it was and archaic compared to other media. And this is a cliched statement. I mean, I know we're all talking about this. So, you know, approaching this as a computer scientist, you know, he started engaging with Yesco. I'm probably not across some of the details of this conversation, but, you know, it was like, hey, I think there's a better way that we can do this. We only want to, you know, I have a very specific duration of campaign that I want, you know, I just want to have this play for, we'd have to ask him, but I think this thing, I just wanted to play at this time of day for this day or this set of 2 or 3 days. And that's it. Very much what Blip does today. And that wasn't really possible. So they started talking, and one thing led to another, and Yesco said, well, this is, you know, your idea about how to do this is great. Go ahead and code it. And again, forgive me if I'm getting the specifics of the story. You can ask Pat O'Donnell for the details. But that's how it got started. They coded it, and they started working on sort of this project. And that's how Blip got started. And from there, you know, after Brent sold that company that he was, you know, was managing at the time, dedicated time to sort of starting Blip full time as a company to do just this, to make it easier to actually buy out of home in this manner. But, you know, that wouldn't work if it was just for one media owner. You needed a company to do this at scale across, you know, all of the media owners for this to actually work as a model. And did I answer it in terms of how Blip?
Absolutely.
Okay. So actually, wait, your question was about Salt Lake and the area. That's true. So it got started there. But what was interesting is that, because this is a new model to out of home, there, you know, that region actually has a lot of digital pedigree. And so a lot of young engineer, a lot of young staff that we hired, you know, is based there. There's just really good brain trust over there. Mm-hmm. Really good
Silicon
digital
slopes.
Culture. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Hmm. All right. This really flew by. We could talk for at least another half an hour about all this stuff, but,
How long has it been? Wow.
But, got to wrap up. The last question very quickly is, if people want to know more about Blip, where do they find you guys online?
Oh, it's just easy. www.blipbillboards.com, or, you know, reach out to me on various channels or, you know, whatever. It's pretty easy.
Great. Well, Daniel, thank you so much for taking some time with me.
Okay. Thank you for having me, Dave. It's been a pleasure.
That's it for this week's episode. I hope you enjoyed it and you learned a thing or two. If you're new to 16.9, it's a podcast that's been around since 2016. You can click around the site and find scores of conversations with smart industry folks. If you're new to digital signage, you need to be reading 16.9. That's at 16-9.net. You'll find thousands of posts by me and expert guest writers about this industry. I don't run a press release republishing mill. If something makes it on 16.9, that means it matters in some way to the business. Everything about 16.9 is free. Great sponsors make my work possible, and one of those is podcast sponsor ScreenFeed. Check them out at screenfeed.com. 16.9 is a product of Vertical Media Consulting Group, the massive media empire I run out of a spare room in my house, now located outside Halifax, Nova Scotia, on the east coast of Canada. Thanks for listening. I'm Dave Haynes.